I'm Chris.
And I'm Kylie. And this is Redefining Resilience,
where we explore what it means to build a resilient lifestyle
so you can thrive in any and every situation.
Lexi, welcome.
Heck yeah. Thank you guys. An honor. No, truly, such an honor. I feel so, yeah.
We're lucky to have you on as our very first guest on Redefining Resilience. Can you give us a little bit of background on who you are, what you've done up until this point, and what you do today?
Yeah. Background. Short and sweet, that's kind of hard, right? Every life moment has truly led where we are today. But I guess I'll start it back in OT school, went to University of Indianapolis, got my doctorate in occupational therapy, specialized in positive psychology, working with veterans that were experiencing homelessness due to mental health and substance abuse. And that kind of got my interest from doing research from there. So then when I graduated, took an awesome opportunity out in Illinois to be a lead OT at a bunch of different facilities, but my heart was in the long-term psychiatric unit. But I got overworked and should not have necessarily, let me rephrase that. That life decision created where I am today because I was overwhelmed, stressed, gray hair, gaining weight, not feeling good, and I needed change. And I got change. So I quit that job, moved back in with my parents. COVID happened and a whole healing journey began. I started working with my mind-body healing coach and started yoga teacher training and got really connected with myself and learned how to listen to my own intuition, my own body. And then people just started asking, being like, hey, can you help me? And from that, I started helping people. And then my business, LM Wellness, became from that. And now I just help people really tap into their own being, their own intuition. And yeah, we feel really, really good optimizing our lives. So
that's so cool.
Yeah.
So what is occupational therapy?
Yeah, the question. I get this all the time, you guys. It's so, yeah. So occupational therapy, we're looking at occupations, and there's an OT practice framework where there is a list of occupations, and it can range from self-care, so like showering, toileting, dressing, to child rearing, to work participation, leisure participation, volunteering, the whole gambit. And what we do is we look at those certain client factors that are prohibiting you from participating in those occupations that you find meaningful, whether that is physiological, psychological, spiritual, emotional, environmental. We look at all of that and kind of figure out, okay, what is preventing you from participating in that to your full capacity? And how can we adapt, modify, improve that type of ordeal with your skills?
Okay. What kind of people need this type of therapy?
Occupational therapy, I mean, I think everybody does, right? We all have a certain occupation that we're like, oh, I wish I could do better at this. And okay, so you look at what's preventing you from doing that. But a lot of times in traditional Western medicine, it's people that have had strokes, have had autism, Down syndrome, a developmental or intellectual disability, any hip replacements, knee replacements, hand, upper body injury, traumatic head injury, any of that, an OT can work with that.
What makes it different from physical therapy?
Yes. So physical therapy is really looking at the physiological body. So they're looking at the nerves, the muscles, and what is firing and what is not firing in order to get you to engage in walking or moving your legs to be able to get you to this place or moving your arm to get you to here. They're working on that brain muscle connection a lot. Whereas OT is looking not only at that, but we're also looking at, okay, what in your environment is impacting that? What inside your emotional response, what are you thinking that's impacting that? Maybe there's something around you that is impacting your engagement in that. So we kind of look at all of that.
And I love what you said about the mind-body connection. What exactly is that? It sounds very ethereal.
Yeah. Mind-body connection. Yeah, we're all connected, right? And so if you look at it in our bodies physiologically, our brain has a bunch of nerve endings that go to everywhere in our body and then back up again to our brain. So we're connected by that. But there's also, like, right, the thoughts that we create in our brain are creating that vibration, which are impacting all that's around. And what's impacting all that's around our bodies create that vibration that's impacting our brain. So that's a connection that we all have through that. And what impacts your brain impacts your body. And what impacts your body impacts your brain.
Ooh. Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Well. I'm a huge believer in the mind-body connection for just training purposes. There's like all these studies that came out that said there's a massive percentage of growth that happens once you have the connection from what you're thinking about training and physically training it. One, I can't remember what it is. I'm going to have to look it up. But they put one group that just did bicep curls and then one group that did bicep curls and thought about it and was really intentional the whole time. They would look at their biceps, they would think about what they're doing, and they grew exponentially larger. And there was no other additives. There was no diet change. There was no lifestyle change. It was just, I'm going to think about what I'm doing. I'm going to be intentional about it. And I'm going to put all of my mind's power into it.
Yeah, I love that. The presence of being in the moment.
Yeah.
How do you, when you're working with a client, how do you kind of work at establishing that mind-body connection?
Lexi, we ask the questions here. No, I'm just kidding.
I'm so intrigued, though.
It's a great question.
It's probably a lot like you did. Yeah. Nothing else matters in this space and time but this moment.
Yeah.
So your work environment, your kids, your wife, any other stimulus doesn't matter. Right now, all we have is the weight. So that's all you got to worry about. And what are we thinking about why we're doing this? Because I'm assuming just like what you're doing, if you're intentional about your actions, you get something from it. The only time you get hurt or injured or do something dumb is when you're unintentional. You're just floating through life. So the more intentional you can be, the more thought process you can put towards the movement, the more you get out of it.
Yeah.
He also, when I've trained with him, he also has me focus on the muscle group that is benefiting from the movement. So by focusing my attention on that muscle group and firing those muscles intentionally, I'm getting more out of every rep.
No, yeah, for sure. I love that. Yeah. So in OT school, we learned linking breath and movement. So a lot of extension is the inhale and then contraction of the muscle is the exhale. Do you kind of work with that as well?
That's kind of the exact opposite. So it depends on what you're doing.
Muscle you're working, gravity, how gravity is working on it and that type of stuff.
Yeah. I'm a big fan of what's called bracing. Okay. So I think the most beneficial way to move weight is with your breath held.
Okay.
Because up and down, you should only breathe at the top of the movement where your skeletal system holds the weight. Because, the best way to explain it is if you stand up and you breathe in really, really deep and fill in your lungs and try to touch your toes, bend over, it's really hard because your lungs are full. If you breathe out, you can bend over and touch your toes. Do you want to be bent over like that with weight on your back? Absolutely not. You want to have everything tight and braced so you hold your breath. Same concept, though. Breathing plays a huge role in everything you're doing. So,
what is mindfulness and what role does that play in what you do on a daily basis to help people?
So mindfulness, I mean, there's so many definitions of what mindfulness can be, but the gist of it is just truly being present, like you said, Chris, in that moment, letting go of what our minds are creating outside of the space that you're in. So you're focusing on you, your body, your feelings. You can even focus on what is immediately around you as well, that sensory stimuli, the lights, the people, the colors, the space. That's still mindfulness. It's just not thinking what happened before or what's yet to come. It's just being right there and right now and noticing that. And then you asked how mindfulness is put into my line of work. That's what I'm trying, right? Getting people to learn how to just be in the present moment, because it's truly the only moment we have We don't have, the past doesn't exist. The future doesn't. So we only have this present moment. And that's when we can listen to our intuition. That's when we can really let go and listen to what, if you believe in God, higher levels, the universe, your own intuition, whatever it is that you believe in, that's when you can really tap into that and you get all the answers. And that's where you feel really good.
How do we know if we're in tune with our intuition or not?
Yeah. I love this question because, right, it's a learning process. It's a life journey. And you just got to start. You just have to start practicing. And the more and more you practice, the more and more it will get tuned. Okay, maybe you're like, my intuition feels like I should eat this candy bar right now. Okay, great. So you eat the candy bar because you feel like your intuition, and then you sit, reflect. Okay, was that my intuition? Did I feel better after doing that? Yes, I did. Oh, that was my intuition. Somehow I needed maybe some sugar to help my glucose levels right now, or energy to take on this next event. Or, oh, I felt really bad after that. Was that my intuition, or was that my ego speaking and I'm just stuffing an emotion from this event that happened with talking with my mom on the phone today that made me really emotional, bringing up childhood memories? Mm. So just start. Right? Just start and listen to that voice inside your head and then just pause and reflect. Again, mindfulness, bringing back to the present moment. Okay, how do I feel? Yeah, feel good? Great. That was probably it. Feel bad? Probably wasn't it.
So what you're telling me is you have to take personal responsibility for your actions and put them through the filter of reality.
Yeah.
Like, was the candy bar good for me? Mm-hmm. And all senses of the word. So you have to take the responsibility for your actions. Mm-hmm. I think that's fantastic.
Yeah. No, 100%, Chris. Yeah. Can I say, but that's really cool, right? Responsibility is power.
Yeah.
And then so it helps us recognize the power with inside of us. Yes. That we have that power, that we have that amazing power and ability with inside of us to create whatever we want to create. That's so cool. I love that.
That's my favorite because it is. Yeah. I posted about it on LinkedIn, I think, this morning.
That's not surprising.
Yeah.
Yeah. Chris loves personal responsibility.
Because it's freeing. It's the only thing that destroys the chains of all this bullshit that we have attached to us. Mm. Everybody else's views and opinions and their responsibilities in their life that they don't feel like they should take over. They just, you know, push on to you. And as long as you're taking care of yourself and being responsible for your actions, you're not chained to any of that anymore. It's awesome.
You mentioned ego, and we haven't talked about ego a whole lot on this podcast yet, but I think it's arguably a very important concept to recognize and understand. So how do you think about ego?
I think of ego as a friend, right? If we're amazing and lovable and I believe perfect just as we are, well, then an ego's there for a reason. An ego can teach us. An ego can guide us. An ego can create certain opportunities for us to heal and learn and grow. Yes, that ego is not always in line with our higher selves, but it provides that balance, right? We live in a world of duality, and that ego can help us create that balance, find where we're still limiting ourselves, right? If our ego didn't come in and didn't say, eat that candy bar because you feel bad that you just talked to that person and now you're stuffing, if that ego never did that, how would you know? If you aren't aware of it, then you can't change. And so you need that awareness, that mindfulness. And so I think that ego plays that balance, that duality inside of it. So,
and I think a cool concept would be if you notice that you're reaching for the candy bar as a way to cope with an emotion, a negative emotion, and you recognize it, you intervene and you say, hey, you know what? My normal response is I'm going to reach for the candy bar, but I'm not going to do it this time because I know that's my ego. That's where I think it is a powerful teacher.
For sure. For sure. I love that. And I love, yeah, like, yeah, it just brings awareness. It can bring so much insight into it.
But I think you have to slow down and actually be cognizant of what's happening in that moment. Because if you're doing things on autopilot, that's where your ego can get the best of you.
100%. Yeah, because our ego is so easy. It's so natural. It takes all our past experiences that some, like, we all store these traumas inside our body. Our ego takes that as normal, as typical, and keeps going. Yeah, overdrive. We're just going autopilot, not thinking. Well, that's where mindfulness comes in, right? When we pause and we're actually in that moment, we're able to conceptualize what is actually happening. And that's when, like, the spiritual things of life, that intuition, that feeling of wholeness, that feeling of connectedness, of love, all of that starts to kind of bubble up. It's always there, but you can kind of feel that a little bit more when you are that mindfulness.
And I think mindfulness, in a sense, it volumes down the noise around us and volumes up our own voice.
100%.
And when you start listening to that voice, like you said, that intuition and confidence really go hand in hand. Mm-hmm. Because you're more secure with who you are, the decisions you're making, the direction you're headed in life. So it all is very much interconnected.
Yeah, 100%. Because when you're listening to your intuition and you're mindful and you're present, you're trusting, right? You're trusting that everything's working out for you and everybody else. And when you have trust, you have that security, right? That safety. So many people nowadays feel so unsafe, right?
Yeah.
For a multitude of reasons. They have that fear, that worry. And so that security, that sense of safety, allowing you to tap into that intuition, that responsibility, that sense of, okay, I got this. Yeah, it's super powerful.
You reminded me of our good friend Abraham Hicks that we saw in Chicago. Lexi and I took a field trip up to Chicago and saw Abraham Hicks speak. And if you don't know who she is, her real name is Esther Hicks, but she goes by Abraham when she's, you know, tapped into her, I don't know if it's like an ego persona or what. You just have to go watch her and experience it. But she talks a lot about manifestation and your thoughts. And you said something that was very Abraham Hicks, which was, everything is always working out for me. That's a phrase that she repeats over and over and over and over again. And when you're feeling down in the dumps and repeating, everything is always working out for me, everything is always working out for me, everything always works out for me, you just repeat it over and over again, it starts to become a belief that you adopt. And then when you're faced with challenges or adversity or emotional situations, you don't get as worked up about it. If you're reminding yourself, hey, we can calm down, we are safe, everything is always working out for me, because up until this point in my life, that is true, right? If we're all here breathing and, you know, for the most part healthy and, you know, have everything we need, all our basic needs met, then everything is working out for us.
100%. I love that. And there's a couple components of what you just said that I love. So I love that, like, yeah, we're feeling in the dumps. One, that's valid. We're humans. We're meant to feel. Feelings give us so much insight. Being mindful and being present doesn't allow those emotions to take our lives over. We're able to sit there and observe those emotions, whether we are sad, depressed, happy, joyful, whatever that be. When we're mindful, we're able to be present and just observe them. And so from there, then we can sit with it. And then we can say, okay, if everything's working out, how is this playing out in my life? And then a huge exercise that I love to do when this starts to occur is, okay, if everything's working out and these are my desires, my wishes, all of this, what is it like? What is already happening in my life that shows me that this exists? So if it's love, right? If I want love in my life, where do I already have love that exists? If it's abundance or success, where in my life do I already have this success? But then it brings you back to the here and now, where you are right now, that mindfulness component, that then you become to recognize that, and that just keeps you that momentum to go, 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 and then everything starts to come to you.
Yeah, I love that. So good. It's no surprise that mindfulness is situated in our resilience model within the composure domain. So when we think about, I think you just perfectly made the case for why mindfulness is so important in order to help us keep our composure and be able to think clearly through difficult situations or challenges, problem solve and be strategic about what we do next and how it aligns with our goals and where we want to go and how we want to get there. Because that's really ultimately, you know, what we have control over. We have control over all of those things.
100%. No, I love that, because when we can be present within ourselves, then we can start to observe what's happening. And we observe what's happening, that creates an awareness, and that awareness creates change. And so there's so much power, there's so much responsibility, there's so much opportunity, the possibilities that can come from that. And yeah, things don't take over you. You get to decide what happens. You get to decide what's occurring. And there's so much power in that as well.
Oh, so good. So what are the benefits of mindfulness?
Well, I mean, there's so many. I mean, you guys name two right now. Name one right off the top of your head. What's a benefit?
Stress management.
Yeah.
Yeah, awareness.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
Emotional regulation.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, there's so much research out there on mindfulness. We're so blessed. And it just shows, like, the dopamine levels, the serotonin, the oxytocin, like all these amazing neurotransmitters just when people are mindful. Like, right? We're just focusing on the present moment, whether they're eating a raisin and focusing on the present moment, whether they're just observing their thoughts in the present moment, whether they're focusing on a task and in a flow state in the present moment. All these amazing feel-good neurotransmitters are being fired during it. So, of course, we're going to regulate our blood pressure. Our heart rate variability is going to be improved. We're going to breathe deeper and more fuller. So that's going to relieve some muscle tension. It's going to allow our diaphragm and lungs to expand, which is going to help our cardiovascular system, which is going to help our immune system to fight off things, which is going to help our digestive system because we're resting, relaxing. Like, it's going to help our joints, our muscles. It's going to help our nerves. And then it helps us obtain everything that we could ever want in our lives, and we're just going to feel really good. And then that's going to vibrate to everybody around us, because vibration, and there's research on this too, interneurons in between individuals, mm-hmm. We give and receive this energy. So then all those people around you are going to be impacted by this. So then they're going to start to change, and all those good things are happening, and then they start to have everything. Like, it's endless. Like, mindfulness, unquestionably, the research I've done, like, people are like working out, walking, resting, eating this, meditation, breath work, mindfulness all around is the one common theme that I always see that always has results for every single individual.
So I'm just playing some of my clients through my head, assuming that they were sitting right next to me. I can hear the questions that they would be asking. So we talked about this, I think, last episode we recorded. Sometimes silence is the loudest thing for people. It's just very overwhelming. And to take responsibility in a world that we can negate the responsibility or escape it very, very quick. I know in the weightlifting world, I can post something on LinkedIn or some social media source and find a niche that's the best in and just promote it there so I don't have to work any harder. I don't have to take responsibility to be better. And it's happened in almost every facet of our life. How do you coach somebody that has never had to be quiet, that has never had to be mindful, is going through these issues, and just doesn't know where to start?
Oh, I love that. Okay, so mindfulness is just becoming aware of the present moment. So when my mind is racing, or I feel overwhelmed, or somebody is talking to me about a certain situation in their life that they just cannot stop thinking and feeling, and they feel overtaken by it, all we do is observe that. So what does that mean? You sit there, you breathe, and you just observe your thoughts. You become an observer of what your mind is observing. So, like, have you guys ever tried that before, just observing your thoughts?
We talk about it a lot. I think it's absolutely fascinating.
Yeah,
actually.
You just observe what's happening. Who cares if your mind is rambling and going in 45 billion different directions? Mine does, but I'm observing them. That's mindful, and you can already feel your body and mind slowing down. And if you continue to observe your thoughts start to slow down. And then you continue to observe those thoughts and your thoughts begin to slow down. And then all of a sudden you're like, why was I even perseverating and going down a rabbit hole of that? And now you're not. That's the power of mindfulness. And so that's where I would begin. Just observing those thoughts. Or another one that I use with kids a lot, especially that have autism or something else, is just observing their sensory environment. So observing the lights or a certain color or what they hear, what they taste, what they smell, what they feel on their bodies. That's a huge one as well. If you're not ready to get inside the brain yet, because that can be overwhelming for some people or hard to conceptualize as well. But things that are coming into your sensory system from the external environment may be a little bit easier. So even just focusing on that can create a mindful component.
In my NLP certification, what you just described is disassociation, where essentially you take yourself out of first person perspective, disassociate with the thoughts that you're experiencing, and you put yourself in a third party perspective. So if you remember back to when we learned this stuff in school, when you read a novel that was written in first person versus third person, it's almost like in first person, you're the main character in the story. In third person, you're observing the main character in the story. And that's the transition that Lexi's suggesting we make when we're starting to feel overwhelmed. And I think it's a great suggestion because when you're in the third person, there's this concept of non-attachment that comes into play. We were talking about this before we started recording. When we get attached to things, it's because we're too close to them and we are holding on to them too tightly. And so when you get into a non-attachment or third person perspective, you can detach from whatever is holding you back or hold that you're clasping or grasping onto so tightly. And you can let go a little bit and put some distance between you and that thing that you're experiencing. Mm-hmm. And that distance, even though it's more of like a visual distance, right? Like you can visualize this distance happening. It mentally and emotionally creates distance as well.
100%. It creates space. It creates opportunity. It creates presence. It creates an ability to be in the here and the now because you're not taken by it. You are observing it. You are in the control of it. Yeah. And I love that. That's what I love. So at the yoga studio that I teach at, we do logs. So we hold these high intensity postures for minutes. And my favorite thing to say during that time is be non-reactive. How can you just be still and find that space or that non-reactivity just to be, right? Because if we can practice that in our mat in an effortful posture, well, then when we're faced with that certain situation that we, whether it's traffic or somebody dies or whatever it may be, instead of reacting, you become non-attached, non-reactive, and you just experience it and become aware of what's happening and you breathe and you create that space. And space is so freeing, you guys. Space feels so good.
Yeah, totally agree. Yoga was actually, it has been a huge part of my life since COVID happened and Lexi was one of the main characters that got me through COVID because the yoga studio had put all of these virtual yoga flows up on Instagram Live for everybody to participate in from home. They didn't charge any money for it. They just said, hey, donate what you can. Don't worry about it if you can't, because they understood that a lot of people lost their jobs during that time. So I was doing yoga as the only form of physical activity during COVID. And then when all of the quarantine, I started going to yoga very regularly, and I remember distinctively one time I was running late to a yoga class and I called ahead. I talked to whoever was at the desk and said, hey, I'm running like 5 minutes late. I was stressed out. I was frantic. I got there and I was just apologizing up and down. And I don't remember who the instructor was there, but she was like, okay, just take a breath. And she actually made me like, And she made me take like 3 deep breaths and calmed me, forced me to calm down. She's like, it doesn't matter. You're here now. It's going to begin when you get here. So don't worry about it. And ever since then, it almost ingrained this mindset in me to not rush and if I am having to rush, if I am running late for something, just accept it. Don't spend the rest of the drive stressing out about how embarrassing it is that you're going to be the last one in class. Like, it is what it is. They're going to make room. They always do. I'm not going to be, no one's going to judge me for it. I'm judging myself for it, but I can recognize that now. Mm-hmm. And now it's like, okay, me stressing out about this is actually putting me more in danger than anything else, because if I'm driving more aggressive or I'm speeding or I'm not taking proper precautions on the way there, I'm potentially setting myself up for a car accident, which we know happens to me based off of our previous episodes. But that was not because I was rushing. So I will say I have put this into practice, and it is something that now I just don't stress when I drive because it's not doing me any favors.
No. Well, when we're rushing, right? Rushing is a fear response. We're fearful of whether being disrespectful or being late or missing out or whatever that is, fear response. So when we're in that fear response, we're not thinking clearly. We aren't being mindful. We aren't breathing. Our breath becomes short. That's when our muscles start to tense up. We're in that fight or flight. Our jaw tenses. And so if we can learn to be like, whoa, wait, take a breath. A breath then allows us to take that third person perspective and observe what's actually happening. And you guys, literally, all is well. Like everything, there's a reason that you are late, whether it's serving somebody else's purpose, your purpose, another purpose. There is a reason and all is good. We all get up so tight, and me included, and like, oh my gosh, it's gonna ruin but it isn't. It's all there. We're all vibrating together as one unit. So it's all working out.
And now I think, okay, if I'm running a couple minutes late, it's maybe because I needed to avoid a car accident, or I needed to, because I'm late, it took me on a different route that I don't normally go, but I'm avoiding traffic. And so maybe if I had taken my normal route and been on time, I would have gotten there even later because I hit, you know, some sort of traffic situation. So I always think, like you said, there's a reason why you're getting to where you're going when you're supposed to be there. So don't stress about it.
100%.
And if we're stressing about little stuff like getting to a destination on time, what happens when big stuff happens?
That's always my question when I watch somebody freaking out in traffic. It's like, what happens when you get in a wreck, bud? You just have an aneurysm and die? Like, I didn't mean to cut you off, or like that person in front of you is going the speed limit, not going 40 over. Like, just breathe, man.
Yeah.
What happens in real life, you know? Nah. It's impressive.
Yeah. It's why it's important for us to maintain perspective on what really matters and what doesn't really matter. You know, work's not going to fire you because you got there at 8:02 instead of 8 o'clock. Also, why are you rushing to work? Like, can we just think about that for a second?
That and, like, look at your plans, you know? Yeah. Did you leave early enough because you planned ahead?
Well,
that's
my biggest
question.
Exactly.
You know?
Most of the time we're waking up and we're just rushing from the get-go. That's why it's really important to have mindful mornings, and we talked about that last time. But it's really important to start the day out on a mindful note so that that can carry through the rest of your day.
I love that. Yeah. Setting that intention, even if you have it just like various points in your day, and it doesn't even have to be that long. You guys probably talked like 10 seconds can change the whole rest of your day if you're mindful for those 10 seconds. Yeah, that's such a powerful. I love that.
Just not looking at your phone upon opening your eyeballs in the morning is a really helpful exercise. Yeah. But I mean, I don't know if there are statistics out there because I don't know how you could capture this information, but I have to be willing to bet that the majority of us
pull our phone out and look at, you know, what did we miss while we were sleeping? Who cares? Mm-hmm. You'll get to it when you get to it.
When you're meant to get to it.
Yeah.
No. But we're raised in a society that we're the main character in everybody's movie. Everything matters because we're here. The party doesn't stop till I walk in or start till I walk in, you know? And we really Kesha. Think that. Yeah, we think that, though. I mean, how many people are freaking out in the line at Kroger when everybody else is in the fucking line because they should make it through sooner? It happens all the time because we don't understand that we're not the main character. Right now is everybody's in the same experience. Just chill out, relax. Yeah. In fact, you could probably have a really cool conversation with the people around you or see that the cash register that you're going up to in self-checkout doesn't take cash. And you would have known that if you'd have paid attention, you know, but instead of freaking out or you instead of that, you freaked out and you made it harder on everybody. Yeah. That's super interesting.
That is so interesting. I love that.
What does gut health have to do with mindfulness and our brain?
Yeah. I mean, there's numerous books and research and articles and physicians and they'll talk about it, right? The probiotic and the prebiotics and all that type of stuff. From my perspective, from that mind-body connection, right? All those nerves are connected to our brain. Our brain's connected to all the nerves in our digestive tract, our stomach. And so there's a couple ways you can look at this, right? Physiologically, what we put into our body has a life force. So is it processed? Is it made through a machine? Then this is going to have less life force than like a fresh apple that you just picked off the tree with your own hands. Mm. They have different vibrations. That vibration is going to impact your body in different ways, which is then going to impact the brain as well. Certain foods can create an inflammation because your body's not digesting it properly because of stress or that fight or flight response. And so then that inflammation causes an overall change in your body, which then changes how you feel, your brain chemicals, what's occurring in there as well. But also, I think the more spiritual side and what I kind of work with clients is how you're perceiving that food. Mm. So let's say you're rushing because you need to get to this meeting. So you're really quickly eating this handful of nuts and then you feel bloated and then you're like, oh, I don't feel right because I feel all bloated. What is that? But let's say you had 5 minutes and you slowly ate a handful of nuts and you feel good and you feel energized. Same food. You intake it. But it's impacting your body because you're perceiving it. I had time. I'm relaxed. I'm able. Let's say we talk about a piece of cake. Let's say you're eating this piece of cake. Again, I'm going to bring up maybe something emotional. We're emotional eating. I just had a really tough day at work and I just want this piece of cake. Or I feel really bad because my stomach hurts and I want to eat this piece of cake to make me feel better. Well, that's going, right? You're already thinking. So there's the mind. That mind is going to create these physiological effects in your body that's going to create inflammation. It's going to be harder to digest. You're going to gain weight, water weight, whatever that may be. Whereas, oh my gosh, I have this piece of cake that was made of love from my mom. She bought these ingredients. She put them together in her own time. And now I'm going to have a couple bites and cherish every single bite of this cake. Guarantee you, if we changed how we perceived the food and what we thought about as we were intaking it and thought of it as spiritual, as a devotional to our bodies because mm-hmm. we love our bodies and they're amazing, we'd feel so much better. So I kind of look at what is our brain thinking about the food rather than the food impacting our body.
Yeah.
So like for me, I go through functional medicine and I got tested for sensitivities. And my sensitivities, of course, were gluten, dairy, eggs, soy. But the thing is, and what I reflect on, is before I had that sensitivity, I had done research. And through that research, I was like, oh, these foods create inflammation. Well, so then in my brain, I already had these foods create inflammation. So then my brain created my body response, which now shows up in my food sensitivities that I'm going to be sensitive to these because my brain already created it. And now my body can't digest it because of that connection. So whereas a lot of people can have gluten and be okay because they enjoy it and love it and eat it and they're still fine.
It's interesting you say that because I recently also did a food sensitivity test and I've had three of these tests done over the years. So my sensitivities have changed over the years, but some have remained the same. Eggs have been one that pops up every single time consistently, but I like eggs. I have no mentally. I enjoy. Is it my favorite food? No, but there's some good omelets out there that I do enjoy, but recently, before I took this test, and it was interesting because I think you had said after a yoga class, just or before a yoga class, just listen to your body. And for some reason during that yoga class, like what kept popping up in my head was gluten. And I'd been eating quite a bit of pasta and breads lately and feeling super bloated. And sure enough, on my food sensitivity test this last time, gluten came up. I only had 5 things that I was sensitive to, and gluten was one of them. And it hasn't shown up in the past historically on my test, but this time around, I mean, I think you're right. It is, it's not what we eat, it's what we think about what we eat.
100%. And so, if we can change how we perceive any event, anything, and make it feel good, it's going to feed what we need. But a lot of times, you guys, if you do it, like if you practice it and you're like, okay, will this piece of cake make me feel good? Should I eat this piece of cake? A lot of times you're going to hear no.
Mm-hmm.
Like, should I eat this bag of chips? Will it make me feel better? A lot of times, if you're really listening, and you're not letting your emotions or stress eating get in the way, you're going to hear a no, okay? You're going to hear, like, I almost just cussed.
You can.
Don't do that.
Are you okay? I literally love broccoli. Like, I crave broccoli. It's so good. And I'm like, okay, not emotional eating. Is this? Yes. And it serves me. And I feel so good after I eat this broccoli. A lot of times people like, should I drink this water or should I have this glass of wine to relax? Or should I have this tea or this glass of wine? A lot of intuition is going to say tea. From my experience, that's what I found. Because our body knows. Mm-hmm. Every cell is working for us. Every cell. And if we just pause and be mindful and really ask our intuition and let go of that emotional component of it, your body is going to choose what exactly that you need.
That's so good.
Mm-hmm.
One of my favorite weightlifters, I can say his name because he's pretty out there. But one guy came up to him at the Arnold Classic and said, hey, man, I eat all the time. Why am I not big? He goes, well, is there a sandwich in your hand right now? And the kid goes, well, no. He goes, well, one, you don't eat all the time because otherwise you'd be eating right now. And two, do you eat like an asshole? And I thought it was so funny that he asked him if he ate like an asshole. And then they didn't really elaborate much, but I looked up more of his stuff. And he got so tired of trying to coach people on how to eat. He would say, if you put it in your hand and you look at it and you say, is this something I should eat? And you say no, and you still eat it, you're eating like an asshole. Don't do that. You're not. Just be smart, man. Your body's going to tell you. You are intelligent enough to understand that Cheetos aren't serving any purpose in your life.
Yeah,
they might make you feel good right away, but it's not going to work long term. The reason why you feel bad is because you're making short term happiness decisions and ignoring the long term that you know exists.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
Yeah. And a lot of times people are eating Cheetos because they're just stuffing a certain emotion as well. A lot of times they don't feel good or an experience just happened. They're stressed, whatever that is. And that's what you stuff because it's easy. It's accessible. It doesn't fill you up. So,
yeah.
Doesn't have a lot of life force.
So good. So, as we wrap up, one question. What do you wish more people knew?
That everything's working out, that they're so loved, and I promise and I guarantee you, everything is working out for you and for everyone.
That's a perfect note to end on.
Yeah, that's good.
Lexi, what's the best way for people to connect with you and get more of you?
Yeah, Instagram at lm.wellness is the best way to reach me. And yeah.
Links to your website are on there and everything. Perfect.
Links to the website. Or you can go to my website, lm-wellness.com. Yeah, I'd love to connect, learn more, talk, grow.
Amazing. Thank you so much.
Thank you, guys. This is awesome. Super cool.
Thanks for listening to Redefining Resilience.
To learn more about building your mental and physical readiness, check out odysseyresilience.org.
And follow us on Instagram, LinkedIn, and TikTok.